welcome to the next installment of The Green Book by Muammar al-Gaddafi. Looks like some of the clips are dropping, so you might experience some skipping. Please forgive me if that is the case. I will re-upload minus all the skipping. If there is skipping, I will review it. And if there is skipping, I will re-upload it to our site so it can be viewed without any skipping, so you can get the full effect of chapters 3 through 5 of The Green Book by the late Gaddafi. Now, in chapter three starts off with the party. And that's for the party. The party is a contemporary form of dictatorship. It is the modern instrument of dictatorial government. The party is the rule of a part over the whole. As a party is not an individual, it creates a superficial democracy by establishing assemblies, committees, and propaganda through its members, i.e. the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, Green Party, and so on. The party is not a democratic instrument because it is composed only of those people who have common interests, a common perception or a shared culture, or those who belong to the same region or share the same belief. They form a party to achieve their ends, impose their will, or extend the domination of their beliefs, values, and interests to the society as a whole. A party's aim is to achieve power under the pretext of carrying out its program. Democratically, none of these parties should govern a whole people who constitute a diversity of interests, ideas, temperaments, regions, and beliefs. The party is a dictatorial instrument of government that enables those with common outlooks or interests to rule the people as a whole. Within the community, the party represents a minority. The purpose of forming a party is to create an instrument to rule the people, i.e., to rule over non-members of the party. The party is, fundamentally, based on an arbitrary authoritarian concept, the domination of the members of the party over the rest of the people. The party presupposes that its accession to power is the way to attain its ends, and assumes that its objectives are also those of the people. This is the theory justifying party dictatorship and is the basis of any dictatorship. No matter how many parties exist, the theory remains valid. The existence of many parties intensifies the struggle for power, and this results in the neglect of any achievements for the people and of any socially beneficial plans. Such actions are presented as a justification to undermine the position of the ruling party so that an opposing party can replace it. The parties very seldom resort to arms in their struggle, but rather denounce and denigrate the actions of each other. This is a battle which is inevitably waged at the expense of the higher vital interests of the society. Some, if not all, of those higher interests will fall prey to the struggle for power between instruments of government, for the destruction of those interests supports the opposition in their argument against the ruling party or parties. In order to rule, the opposition party has to defeat the existing instrument of government. To do so, the opposition must minimize the government's achievements and cast doubt on its plans, even though those plans may be beneficial to the whole society. Consequently, the interests and programs of the society become the victims of the party's struggle for power. Such struggle is, therefore, politically, socially, and economically destructive to the society, despite the fact that it creates political activity. Thus, the struggle results in the victory of another instrument of government, the fall of one party, and the rise of another. Bye-bye, Democrats. Hello, Republicans. Even though Republicans didn't fully back Donald Trump, they own stuff now. They are in power. It is in fact a defeat for the people, i.e. a defeat for democracy. Furthermore, parties can be bribed and corrupted either from inside or out. Now originally, the party is formed ostensibly to represent the people. Subsequently, the party leadership becomes representative of the membership, and the leader represents the party elite. It becomes clear that this partisan game is a deceitful farce based on a false form of democracy. It has a selfish, authoritarian character based on maneuvers, intrigue, and political games. This confirms the fact that the party system is a modern instrument of dictatorship. The party system is an outright, unconvincing dictatorship, one which the world has not yet surpassed. It is, in fact, the dictatorship of the modern age. The parliament of the winning party is indeed a parliament of the party, for the executive power formed by this parliament is the power of the party over the people. Party power, which is supposedly for the good of the whole people, is actually the arch enemy of a fraction of the people, namely the opposition party or parties and their supporters. The opposition is, therefore, not a popular check on the ruling party, but rather is itself opportunistically seeking to replace the ruling party. According to modern democracy, the legitimate check on the ruling party is the parliament, the majority of whose members are from that ruling party. That is to say, control is in the hands of the ruling party and power is in the hands of the controlling party. Thus, the deception, falseness, and invalidity of the political theories dominant in the world today become obvious. From these emerge contemporary conventional democracy. The party represents a segment of the people, but the sovereignty of the people is indivisible. The party allegedly governs on behalf of the people, but in reality, the true principle of democracy is based upon the notion that there can be no representation in lieu of the people. The party system is the modern equivalent of the tribal or sectarian system. A society governed by one party is similar to one which is governed by one tribe or one sect. The party, as shown, represents the perception of a certain group of people or the interests of one group in society or one belief or one region. Such a party is a minority compared with the whole people, just as the tribe and the sect are. The minority has narrow, common sectarian interests and beliefs from which a common outlook is formed. Only the blood relationship distinguishes a tribe from a party. And, indeed, a tribe might also be the basis for the foundation of a party. There is no difference between party struggle and tribal or sectarian struggles for power. Just as tribal and sectarian rule is politically unacceptable and inappropriate, likewise the rule under a party system. Both follow the same path and lead to the same end. The negative and destructive effects of the tribal and sectarian struggle on society is identical to the negative and destructive effects of the party struggle. Chapter 4. Class. The political class system is the same as a party, tribal, or sectarian system, since a class dominates society in the same way that a party, tribe, or sect would. Classes, like parties, sects, or tribes, are groups of people within society who share common interests. Common interests arise from the existence of a group of people bound together by blood relationship, belief, culture, locality, or standard of living. Classes, parties, sects, and tribes emerge because blood relationship, social rank, economic interest, standard of living, belief, culture, and locality create a common outlook to achieve a common end. Thus, social structures in the form of classes, parties, tribes, or sects emerge. These eventually develop into political entities directed toward the realization of the goals of that group. In all cases, the people are neither the class, the party, the tribe, nor the sect, for these are no more than a segment of the people and constitute a minority of the population. If a class, a party, a tribe, or a sect dominates a society, then the dominant system becomes a dictatorship. However, a class or a tribal coalition is preferable to a party coalition since societies originally consisted of tribal communities. One seldom finds a group of people who do not belong to a tribe, and all people belong to a specific class. But no party or parties embrace all of the people, and therefore the party or party coalition represents a minority compared to the masses outside their membership. Under genuine democracy, there can be no justification for any one class to subdue other classes for its interests. I repeat, under genuine democracy, there can be no justification for any one class to subdue other classes for its interests. Similarly, no party, tribe, or sect can crush others for their own interests. Now, to allow such actions abandons the logic of democracy and justifies resort to the use of force. Such policies of suppression are dictatorial because they are not in the interest of the whole society, which consists of more than one class, tribe, or sect, or the members of one party. There is no justification for such actions, though the dictatorial argument is that society actually consists of numerous segments, one of which must undertake the liquidation of others in order to remain solely in power. This exercise is not, accordingly, in the interest of the whole society, but rather in the interest of a specific class, tribe, sect, party, or those who claim to speak for the society. Such an act is basically aimed at the member of the society who does not belong to the party, class, tribe, or sect which carries out the liquidation. A society torn apart by party feud is similar to one which is torn apart by tribal or sectarian conflicts. A party that is formed in the name of a class inevitably becomes a substitute for that class and continues in the process of spontaneous transformation until it becomes hostile to the class that it replaces. Any class which inherits a society also inherits its characteristics. If the working class, for example, subdues all other classes of a particular society, it then becomes its only heir and forms its material and social base. The heir requires the traits of those from which it inherits, though this may not be evident all at once. With the passage of time, characteristics of the other eliminated classes will emerge within the ranks of the working class itself. The members of the new society will assume the attitudes and perspectives appropriate to their newly evolved characteristics. Thus, the working class will develop a separate society possessing all of the contradictions of the old society. In the first stage, the material standard and importance of the members become unequal. Thereafter, groups emerge which automatically become classes that are the same as the classes that were eliminated. Thus, the struggle for domination of the society begins again. Each group of people, each faction, and each new class will all vie to become the instrument of government. Being social in nature, the material base of any society is changeable. The instrument of government of this material base may be sustained for some time, but it will eventually become obsolete as new material and social standards evolve to form a new material base. Any society which undergoes a class conflict may at one time have been a one-class society, but through evolution, inevitably becomes a multi-class society. The class that expropriates and acquires the possession of others to maintain power for itself will soon find that through evolution, it will be itself subject to change as though it were the society as a whole. In summary, all attempts at unifying the material base of a society in order to solve the problem of government or at putting an end to the struggle in favor of a party, class, sect, or tribe have failed. All endeavors aimed at appeasing the masses through the election of representatives or through parliaments have equally failed. To continue such practices would be a waste of time and a mockery of the people. Chapter 5, Plebiscites. Plebiscites? Just listen on. Plebiscites are a fraud against democracy. Those who vote yes or no do not, in fact, express their free will, but rather are silenced by the modern conception of democracy as they are not allowed to say more than yes or no. Such a system is oppressive and tyrannical. Those who vote no should express their reasons and why they did not say yes. And those who say yes should verify such agreement and why they did not vote no. Both should state their wishes and be able to justify their yes or no vote. What then is the path to be taken by humanity in order to conclusively rid itself of the elements of dictatorship and tyranny? The intricate problem in the case of democracy is reflected in the nature of the instrument of government, which is demonstrated by conflicts of classes, parties, and individuals. The elections and plebiscites were invented to cover the failure of these unsuccessful experiments to solve this problem. The solution lies in finding an instrument of government other than those which are subject to conflict and which represent only one faction of society. That is to say, any instrument of government which is not a party class, sect, or tribe, but an instrument of government which is the people as a whole. In other words, we seek an instrument of government which neither represents the people nor speaks in their name. There can be no representation in lieu of the people, and representation is fraud. If such an instrument can be found, then the problem is solved and true popular democracy is realized. Thus, humankind would have terminated the eras of tyranny and dictatorships and replaced them with the authority of the people. The Green Book presents the ultimate solution to the problem of the instrument of government and indicates for the masses the path upon which they can advance from the age of dictatorship to that of genuine democracy. This new theory is based on the authority of the people, without representation or deputation. It achieves direct democracy in an orderly and effective form. It is superior to the older attempts at direct democracy, which were impractical because they lacked popular organizations at base levels. So we just read chapters 3 through 5 of the Green Book, Parties, Classes, and Plebiscites. Tune in, make sure you check out our next installment of the Green Book, where we go over chapters 6, 7, and 8. They're going to cover the popular conferences and people's committees and various other things to affect our known democracy. I'm your host, Hassan Nabduni, reading the Green Book by the late Gaddafi. See you next time.